The world is a frightening place. How are we to navigate the perils that lurk out there? Well, the British Army has some advice for its soldiers. The first thing the soldiers are told to look out for is the absence of normal, i.e. the sudden disappearance of children or women or traffic from the streets. Those things that should be there suddenly not being there. The second phenomenon they are warned to be vigilant about is the presence of abnormal, meaning the abrupt appearance of things that shouldn't be there suddenly being there. Unfamiliar pickup trucks, hard-faced men in black robes showing up on street corners trying to look like itinerant balloon sellers. Or perhaps a woman being interviewed about the distant past in a Spanish farmhouse.
Right, let me just check this is on. So, this is Carly Watson interviewing Helen Cranshaw.
Sorry, you're going to have to remind me what this is for.
It's for my podcast. It's all about the interesting people living in this part of Spain, in this valley, really. So there's Martin Woot of the 90s band Flock of Sea Containers. Remember them?
No.
Oh. Well, Sylvia Tremlett, who wrote that book that was huge in the noughties, A Simpering of Ravens?
No.
Oh. So anyway, I've seen your husband about in town, though you don't mix with us other Brits that much. Then somebody said that he'd been huge in the Blair government and you and him had been this power couple. So I thought it would be fascinating to talk to you about those years and how you ended up here in this valley living a much simpler life.
Okay.
Would your husband like to talk too? He's called Rupert, right?
No, he's called Rupert.
I said Rupert.
No, he's called Rupert. It's got a small R. And now you're thinking, he's got a small something, because you've seen him in town looking all nervous with his stupid string bag full of lemons, wearing those hippie Kurdish trousers that make you look like you pooed yourself, and his ridiculous little ponytail. You're thinking, how could that have ever bestrode the world like a very colossus? But it did once. He's got nothing to say. But I'm happy to talk.
Okay, right. Well, you met while studying at Oxford. You were doing English. Rupert, architecture.
He told me he was 6 years old when he decided he was going to be an architect. Not wanted to be, decided to be. He had this technique. He would simply go on and on at his parents or his scout troop leader or his sister until they did what he wished them to do.
But isn't that just whining?
No, Rupert refined it into a method. He even came up with a name for it. Force suasion. Being an architect, creating buildings, it's a way of getting people to do what you want them to do. It allows you to position people in certain ways, to control how they move from one space to the next. After university, he went straight into private practice while I raised our two boys, Mies and Corbu.
And would you say you could pinpoint the moment when he, how can I put it, started to evolve?
Oh, quite clearly. Funnily enough, I remember I was making a soup.
What I'm doing is piddling, Helen. And only a fool would be content with piddling.
But what is it you want to do?
I want to be a player architect, like Norman Foster. I want respect. I want influence. I want the power to design the buildings I want to see built. I want to change the world. But at the moment, I'm lucky if I get to alter a walk-in wardrobe.
I know, but you're mainly taking commissions from private clients, aren't you? I mean, surely that's where the money is.
People with a surfeit of cash and a deficit of taste. I present them with a vision of beauty, and they always want to ruin the spatial flow by insisting on things like doors and walls.
Walls are pretty crucial for buildings.
Some walls are crucial, yes. Other walls are just walls.
You want to keep walls to a minimum?
I want to keep everything to a minimum.
Less is more?
No, less is less. That's the whole point of less.
Sorry, obviously, I wasn't implying minimalism is maximalism.
Then there's the oligarchs. The Eastern European gangsters wanting everything ornate. Everything painted gold. Wanting to live like Caesar with a taste of Elton John.
It could be much worse.
Oh, I know. After all, I refuse to stoop so low as to design buildings for local authorities.
What's the issue with local authorities?
What isn't the issue? Endless meetings, endless restrictions, endless ramps.
Ramps?
Ramps. They want ramps everywhere.
For wheelchair access?
Yes.
But surely that's just...
Preposterous. Exactly.
Well, but look, darling. You are making a very good living. You have everything you need.
Maybe. But I haven't got everything I want.
So what happened?
He embarked on his first project, which turned out to be me. He decided to reimagine me, because what he really wanted was to be the top half of a player couple, like Richard and Ruthie Rogers.
Yeah. I read on Wikipedia that Rogers was like the architect of choice for Britain PLC, wasn't he?
To Rupert's chagrin, yes. And his wife, Ruthie, ran the River Cafe in Hammersmith, which set new standards for getting away with the amount you could charge for a small amount of food you could have bought in a shop yourself and plonked on a plate.
So Rupert wanted you to open a cafe?
Not specifically, no. That was a delicious meal. Celia always has such lovely gatherings.
Yeah. Very nice. I was just looking at Celia. There's something very sexy about a powerful businesswoman, don't you think?
I suppose.
You know, she's just opened a second boutique. You could do something like that.
I don't know the first thing about clothes or how to sell them.
Don't do yourself down. You could do something equally impressive. What about Stella? She's managing that recording studio in Islington. It's given her something extra.
It's given her more money. That must be nice.
It's not just the money, is it? It's the whole package. She looks very sexy.
Are you saying you're attracted to Stella?
Generally speaking, I mean, I'd say success is quite an aphrodisiac. So, yes, now Stella's got success, she is instantly more attractive. More desirable.
More desirable than me?
You could start your own business. You've got a good brain. You should be using it. Besides which, it would help me.
Help you?
You see, this is why Norman Foster isn't as big as Richard Rogers. Because nobody knows what Mrs. Foster does. Or even if there is a Mrs. Foster.
I don't have a clue what I'd do.
Wait, you need to find something. Honestly, I'm sure if I left you to your own devices, you'd be perfectly happy to be a stay-at-home mother.
But you don't think perfectly happy is good enough?
No. I don't think it is.
I knew, unless I did what was required, I'd most likely be gone, and some younger, more driven woman would take my place. The important thing seemed to be to find a niche, I suppose, because once you've filled a niche, there's no room for anybody else in there.
So what did you do?
Well, I was walking past Arding and Hobbs, the big department store that used to be in Clapham. Long gone now, of course. They had the flags of all nations flying outside, and I happened to notice how grimy and ragged they were. Zaire was in a particularly tattered state. Rather like real life. Anyway, I met the manager and inquired who was responsible for the care and upkeep of the flags. It turned out that it was nobody's responsibility. Well, I pointed out that not only did the scruffy condition of the flags make the store look shabby, but they were also risking offending wealthy Zairean shoppers with the state of their flag. I got the contract to clean and maintain the store's flags. 6 months later, I was running my own flag and pennant maintenance business, called it Ensign of the Times.
And did cleaning flags make you happier?
I don't know, really. Rupert was happier with me, so that made my life easier. Everything fell into place pretty quickly. Soon I had a staff of 6. I was running 2 offices. I started pitching for international work. Then Rupert decided it was time to weigh up what his own options were. I'm still not entirely sure what it is you want.
I want to move forward. But more importantly, I want to move up. I want power and influence. I'm thinking politics.
Oh, are you sure?
Yes, surely that's power. Destroying trade unions, starting major wars in minor countries.
You want to stand as an MP? Well, that doesn't sound like your kind of thing.
Shaking hands with the public, knocking on people's doors, smiling on cue, God no. And even if the constituents vote you in, then they can just as easily unvote you out. It's barbaric when you think about it. No, but there has to be a way in.
It was at this point that Rupert heard two magic words. Think tank.
So this was when? Late 1995?
Yes. I mean, Rupert could sense which way the wind was howling. That's why, despite his natural inclinations, he joined a left-wing think tank.
Oh, the Lozenge Institute.
I've no idea why it's called that.
So when Labour swept to power in 97, he was in the right place at the right time, I guess.
Blair loved think tanks. They meant he didn't have to do all his own thinking. By then, Rupert had decided to make the leap from think tank to task force.
Right, because task forces have more power.
And Blair loved task forces, because they told him what he wanted to hear. Rupert relished the possibility of reshaping society, moving people around like the cursor in his computer screen.
And what was the task force he joined?
The Blue Tangerine Affordable Housing Task Force. Although most of the affordable housing wasn't actually affordable, at least not for those it was intended for. But the task force turned out to be Rupert's natural environment, because you get lots of power and influence, but almost zero responsibility.
So I know Rupert got very close to the Prime Minister. I've seen photos of them drinking Prosecco with Noel Gallagher and Ben Elton.
Well, he waited and wheedled until he could get an invite to a dinner with Tony. Then finally it came, an invite to Helena Kennedy QC's place. God! When he came back, he was so excited.
Hi.
Hey, how did it go?
Perfect. It couldn't have gone better.
Does Tony like your ideas?
Oh, yeah. I'd been there about 20 minutes, and Tony ordered pizzas for his bodyguards and Salman's bodyguards. Anyway, once they'd gone into the other room to eat, I sat down next to Tony, and I went into my pitch. I explained how the work of the great modernist architects, Mies van der Rohe and Le Corbusier, had been unfairly traduced by the enemies of progress, like that reactionary clot Prince Charles, with his organic oatmeal biscuits and his visions of self-effacing stone cottages.
That was risky. He and Charles might be mates.
I don't think so. Tony sniggered when I mentioned him. Anyway, I told him, the issue isn't that architects have gone too far, but rather that they haven't gone far enough. What's needed is more organisation, more planning, more control.
Tony liked that, did he?
Definitely. He had half a spoonful of his granita of summer fruits, then leaned in to hear more. So I went into the second part of the pitch, how people had to be convinced that they wanted this themselves. I told him how through persuasion, instead of the government doing what the people demand, which, when you think about it, is terribly old-fashioned, you could get the people to demand what you wanted to give them in the first place.
I bet Tony liked that as well.
He loved it. I told him we need a whole new way of doing things. If all the powers of the government, all the ministers, all the civil servants simply went on and on and on and on without deviation or deflection, soon the populace would be clamouring to be given the chance to live in planned housing, in controlled zones, eating nutritious, balanced meals in spacious communal canteens. Ruthie Rogers could design the menus. Anyway, just as he was leaving, we were on the doorstep and Tony said, Rupert, I want you to do the undoable.
Wow. What did you say?
I said, I'd do the undoable.
Must have been an exciting time.
For Rupert, yes. Finally, he had power. He had, well, everything, really. He had an influential position, a partner with a successful flag cleaning business, a family and a house. Or rather, the house. Rupert loved the house more than anything. He'd found a place in Belgravia, just half a mile from Richard and Ruthie's. Of course, I wasn't allowed to see the place until he'd completely ripped it out and rebuilt it. Or, as he put it, transformed it into an oasis of light and space.
It's just along here.
I wish you'd have let me see the house before now. I could have helped you pick out some fabrics.
Don't worry, everything's been taken care of. Here we are.
There's no door handle, no keyhole.
It has an electronic key, like the car. Once you hear the beep, The door's unlocked and you can enter. Shit, set the alarm off.
Wow. It's a massive glass staircase.
It's not a staircase, Helen. It's an agent of linkage, creating flow from the basement all the way up to the new skylights in the loft. A conventional staircase would have disrupted the sense of lightness and space. Come.
Oh.
What?
Well, it's weird not having any handrail or anything. It makes me feel like I might fall off.
You won't.
I'm going to go back down.
I presume you like it.
It's amazing. There's so much space. It's the least wall-y house I've ever seen. I don't want to be picky, but what about storage space? There's no cupboards or shelves or anything.
If you look closely, you can see that wall there is all cupboards.
Is it? It looks like just a wall. There's no handles or...
Come. Come here. Look. See that tiny little indentation?
No, where?
There. That little square indentation.
Where? Oh, God, yes, I see.
Press it. And pull. See? There's plenty of storage space.
Oh, very nice.
You can keep all your knick-knacks and ornaments in here.
Keep ornaments in a drawer?
Don't worry, there's plenty of space.
All the same, these indentations are quite tricky to see. I might have to put stickers on them just until I get used to where they are.
Stickers?
Just until I get the hang of...
Stickers?
Sorry.
While we're at it, why don't we stick up some Laura Ashley wallpaper? Get some DFS sofas.
Sorry, I
You'll get to know where the handles are. You'll learn.
To say it was our new home, but it wasn't exactly what you'd call homely. More like some futuristic film set.
It sounds magical.
You see, the thing about minimalism is it's demanding. It asks a lot of you. Everything is balanced on a hair trigger of harmony. The slightest thing out of place throws the whole delicate equilibrium into utter chaos.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I never was the tidiest of people, but after about 2 months, Rupert somehow got me into the habit of putting everything away. Then after 4 months, I decided to rent a secret bedsit. Tiny place in Vauxhall. Filled it. Floor to ceiling with lovely sweet things. Big, comfy, cosy chairs. Leatherette footstools. Flowery applique table mats. Pottery turtles. A rocking chair. I'd sneak off there. It was like visiting a lover. I'd go there 2, maybe 3 times a week. Only for a couple of hours. To enjoy all the lovely things. It was so nice. I'd just sit in the rocking chair and stroke a ceramic clown. Then Rupert found out.
Hello, Helen.
Oh.
Welcome home.
Oh, hello, darling. You startled me.
How was your afternoon?
Fine. Well, apart from the weather, which isn't fine. It's horrible.
Where have you been?
Just shopping.
Shopping?
Yes.
Where?
Just the shops.
You can drop the act, Helen. I know where you've been. You've been spending time at that place.
What place?
Flat 6, 93 Weedon Road, Vauxhall.
You know about it.
I suspected for weeks, so I decided to have you followed.
You had me followed?
Yes. It was actually Gordon Brown who was following you. That man cannot let anything go. You have to admire him for it.
But he's the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
That's how much me and Tony and Gordon care about you. So, if you'd like to look at these photographs Gordon took, I'm sure you'll recognise yourself. Getting out of a cab. See how happy you are, Helen? Putting the key in the lock. Disappearing inside. I shudder to think what ugliness lurks within.
It's just a few knick-knacks.
I don't want to know. No, I'm not going to shout at you, Helen. I don't have to. Because you know that what you've done is wrong. Don't you?
Yes.
How do you think it makes me feel to see you looking happy like this?
I'm sorry, Rupert.
So you gave up the flat?
Yes. To be honest, by that stage, I was so busy cleaning flags, I didn't really have much time to stroke a ceramic clown. For a while, things settled down. But then, Patrick arrived.
Patrick?
Patrick changed Rupert. I can definitely divide our lives into pre-Patrick and post-Patrick.
Hello, darling. I didn't think you'd still be up. How did the briefing with Tony go?
It was fine. Did you see it?
Did I see what?
Patrick.
Who's Patrick?
Some morbidly obese JD sports wearing lager louder, I guess.
Is this someone you're working with?
No. You know our end of terrace wall?
Yes.
The wall, which has been smoothed over and over to the finish of an egg, then coated 5 times with that special white paint I imported from Germany?
Yes.
Well, on that beautiful wall, Patrick, who I assume is some idiot working class oik, has spray-painted his name in 2-foot-high letters.
Oh, what a bore.
A bore? A bore? I couldn't feel more violated. God knows how he got to Belgravia from his slum. But let's face it, no proletarian kid is capable of waddling more than a few hundred yards without having to sit down for a packet of crisps, a bottle of Sunny Delight and some crack cocaine.
Sorry, darling, I'm a bit frazzled. Dry Kleenex 01 was exhausting.
What? What are you saying?
I told you, Dry Kleenex 01. The Dry Cleaning Expo in Glasgow. I've been gone for 2 days. I rather naively thought you might have noticed.
You don't care, do you?
It can be sorted out tomorrow.
Every second those letters are on that wall, they cause me acute anguish.
Well, if it's so upsetting, go and paint over it yourself.
I did. I made it bigger.
Why would you want to do that?
I didn't want to do it. I had half a tin of the original paint, so I painted over it. But something must have happened whilst it was under the stairs in the coal hole. Or perhaps it reacted with the black spray paint. Either way, it's turned dark grey. And because I'd simply followed the outline of the letters, it made them grow bigger.
We can get the builders to come and sort it out. It's just a bit of graffiti, for God's sake.
Why did I marry you?
What?
You're my partner. You're supposed to understand. I feel like sleeping in the spare room.
Well, you should have designed a house with a bloody spare room then, shouldn't you?
I suppose you calmed down once it was sorted out.
It took 2 days for the builders to turn up. I was so relieved when they arrived. But then, after 90 minutes, the foreman said there was a problem. I went to look. I couldn't believe it. They'd given it 3 coats, but there'd obviously been a chemical reaction between the spray paint, the paint from the coal hole, and the new paint, so that now the word Patrick was picked out in bright orange letters on a pure white background, and it had got much bigger too. It was massive, as if our house was some kind of bar called Patrick.
How did Rupert react to that?
Didn't bring the best out of him. Rupert, what are you doing?
What does it look like I'm doing? I'm lying on the kitchen floor.
Why?
I'm admiring these chairs, the Barcelona chairs.
They are pretty nice.
These are cantilever steel, designed by Mies van der Rohe for the German pavilion at the 1929 Barcelona International Exposition. Nice. They are perfection.
But are they worth lying on the kitchen floor for? I don't think Tony'd like you lying on the floor.
No. No, you're right. Tony! All right, geese? yeah, sound. Yeah. Cool. No problemo. I'll be there in 30, dude.
Everything all right?
Tony's got the president of Indonesia at Downing Street. Hey, Alistair's been telling him about my ideas, but Tony wants me to go over and do it in person.
That's marvellous.
Right, I'm going there now. But I want you to have a stern word with those builders. Say, listen, you useless gits, just get rid of that bloody word. Chop it out if you have to, but get rid of it.
Okay, but I might not call them gits. Rupert drove back about 4 hours later. He turned his headlights to high beam so he could see what the workmen had done. And what they'd done, what the useless gits had done, was use chisels and hammers and drills to carve the name out of the brickwork. So now the word Patrick was hacked into our wall in 6-foot-high letters. Patrick!
And that's when Rupert drove the Audi straight at the word, at the wall. The word was so big, he couldn't miss it.
Christ, was he injured?
Big Audis are known for their safety features. The crumple zones crumpled and the airbags were deployed. He got out without a mark on him. Then he walked into the kitchen and sat down to drink a bottle of bleach.
Oh, God, that is so contraindicated.
He would have died in agony if Jana, the Finnish au pair, hadn't come in looking for some polenta for a late-night snack. Luckily, in Finland, suicide is so common they teach antidote administration at junior school. She immediately knocked the bottle of bleach from Rupert's hand and poured bottle after bottle of Evian down him until the paramedics arrived. Do you know, in all the time Rupert was in the Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, Tony never went to see him. Although Gordon Brown did send some balloons.
That must have been such a dreadful time for you both.
We got through it. After he came out of hospital, we took the kids and came here to southern Spain, to this lovely little whitewashed farmhouse in the Sierra Nevada. Gorgeous countryside. And it worked. He took time to smell the roses. Not that he likes roses. He thinks they have too many petals, too cluttered. But the important thing is he slowed down.
But how does Rupert cope? I mean, with this place being so, like it is.
So relaxed and disorganised and messy. There was a moment after about a year when I caught him looking discontentedly at the kitchen, thinking of how to improve the flow. And another night he shouted at Corbu, "Can't you clear up some of this bloody mess?" We all froze, like a Siberian farmer hearing the howl of the first wolves of winter. That night, while Rupert lay sleeping wrapped in dreams of towering cities, I went outside and on the white moonlit wall of the farmhouse, with a Sharpie, I wrote in tiny letters the one word, Patrick.
Ah! No! No! It can't be! He's here! No!
By the way, you can't use any of this in your stupid podcast.
What? Then why did you let me interview you?
It's nice to talk about old times.
Barcelona Chairs starred Ambeka Maud, Hugh Quashie and Siobhan Redmond. It was written and narrated by Alexi Sale and adapted for radio by Graham Duff. The producer was Joe Nunnery. It was a BBC Studios production.